It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine modern romance and the world of online dating services as matchmaking platforms. They proliferate. Call in with your questions about dating apps and your story using them. 800-642-1234. Conversation is right here. 800-642-1234. Lisa Shirabi is an assistant professor in the Hugh Downs School of Human Communication, director of the Relationships and Technology Lab at Arizona State University. Lisa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, at a high level here, how are dating apps changing modern dating as we know it?
Well, they've become the most common way to meet a romantic partner, at least in the United States. So it used to be that we would meet through our social networks, through our friends, through our family members, maybe at work or at school. But increasingly, meeting through online dating sites and mobile dating apps is just how dating is happening. So in that sense, they've changed a lot because now you are meeting people through your cell phone, through your computer, versus out there in the real world.
Wisconsin, though, is a collection of rural and suburban and some urban areas. Are dating apps more successful in some places than others?
I think that they've become so common that regardless of where you live, there's opportunity there. So if you live in a city and you're around people all of the time, then you're going to have a really large pool. It's going to be easy to meet people on these apps. But also if you live in more rural areas, this can be a great way to just expand your reach and to meet people outside of your immediate vicinity, outside of your immediate network. And so I think regardless of which group you fall into, there's good reason to try these things out if you're looking to meet somebody.
And there's so many out there now, you know, Tinder, Bumble, Match, they're all among the most popular ones in the U.S. What sets their services apart?
I think one of the big things when you're talking about the major dating apps like Bumble and Tinder is just the size of the pool. Because they don't cater to any one specific demographic, they just have so many users. And so especially if you're new to online dating, that can be a really great place to start to figure out what you like about the process, what you don't like. And then outside of those mainstream apps, there's also niche dating apps for pretty much anything you could think of, or any interest you might have, whether you are a farmer or a pet lover, whatever it might be. And so that's also a good way to explore interests that you have that might be really important to you in choosing a partner.
What are the upsides and downsides of really trying out a niche site like that, that focuses, say, on, you said, mentioned farmers and people who appreciate rural areas versus the larger pool of the sites we talked about?
So one thing that's really nice about the niche platforms is that they're geared towards a specific crowd. So if you know that something is truly a dating deal breaker to you, like for instance, people who I talk to will bring up things like politics, like religion. If you will not date somebody who is not a certain religion, who doesn't share your political leanings, you could use a niche dating app to just essentially filter out anybody who you wouldn't even consider. So in that sense, they can be a lot more effective if you have really specific interests or a specific person that you're trying to find versus trying to filter them all out on a larger dating app where you're just going to be exposed to so many people.
And as you are in a communication school, is consent different when you have these types of technologies involved?
Yeah, I mean, a lot about the communication process in general can be different because the way that the relationship is starting out is through an app. It's through text-based messaging. And so sometimes it can feel less like you're talking to a real person, and it can make it easy for people to just let imaginations run wild, build people up and build up their expectations. And just the process in general, because of how the relationship starts, can look quite a bit different from what you would see face to face.
So, you know, here in Wisconsin, it's outdoor friendly state. Users may highlight pictures of people holding fish they caught, maybe deer they've killed. Is having unique pictures better?
Yeah, I think that one complaint people have about dating apps is that they feel like they're superficial because the picture is such a prominent part of the profile. So they feel like they're being judged just based on attractiveness. But I actually think that pictures are a great way to give somebody a sense of who you are. It's kind of like, don't tell me, show me. Like, don't tell me you're interested in fishing. Show me that you're interested in fishing and seeing people with their fish pics. And I mean, that can be a great way to give people a better sense of what you would be like outside of the app, because they can actually see you engaging in those activities that are important to you.
Liesl Shorabi heads up the Relationships and Technology Lab at Arizona State University as we explore the implications of dating apps on relationships. Colin, with your perspective, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the ups and downs of dating apps, how to minimize risk and use these platforms in healthy ways. Call in with your experiences dating online, what you've learned, 800-642-1234. Join the conversation here at 800-642-1234. Liesl Shorabi is an assistant professor at Arizona State University, and her research is focused on technology's role in modern romance. Let's talk about these algorithms, Liesl. You say many dating app users are unaware that apps like Tinder use algorithms to determine how users are shown to each other. How do these algorithms work?
Yeah, at a very basic level, the algorithms are basically designed to narrow the pool and also help you find somebody who you're going to be interested in, who's also going to reciprocate that interest and be interested in you as well. And so if you were to just let people loose on a dating app, there's so many other users that that would just quickly spiral. It would be really overwhelming. You would get burned out so fast with the process. And so the algorithms, I mean, depending on the platform, they're taking into account your preferences, your taste, and they're trying to deliver partners who you might be interested in having a conversation with.
Why are your filters so tricky for dating app developers? Filtering for people, what is sticky about that?
It's actually a really complex problem that they're trying to solve. And the algorithms, I mean, if you think about the algorithms that recommend products to you on Amazon or that recommend movies to you on Netflix, they just have to show you something that you might like. So they just have to take into account your preferences. But on a dating app, you also have to take into account the preferences of the other person. So showing you your most desirable partner out of the entire pool isn't going to be enough. You also have to think about, is that person going to reciprocate? Are they also going to be interested and find you desirable? And so it's a tricky, tricky process for them to work through of figuring out, how can we deliver recommendations that are actually going to lead to conversations and lead to dates versus recommendations that are going to have some people getting rejected and other people just getting overwhelmed with the amount of messages that they're receiving?
Let's bring on a call. Tyler in Wauwatosa. Hi, Tyler. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey. So I was like the most single person known to man, and I moved down to the Wauwatosa area for work, and I thought, hey, let me download Tinder, because I really didn't have anyone down here. And I graduated school in like 2011, and back then when you used Tinder, it was very much like, hey, just trying to meet people because I have a hard time meeting people. But when I moved down here like 4 or 5 years ago, at that point Tinder had just become like hookup culture, and it was really hard for people to kind of get past a physical appearance. And if they were remotely not interested in you, they would just be like an automatic right swipe for for me. I noticed that a lot of times girls, it's really easy for girls to get matches. My current fiance, she's like, I had 10 to 15 matches, a week. And I'd be lucky if I had one or two in the course of a month.
Tyler, let's get insight here from Liesl. What do you hear in Tyler's story?
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing, I think, is a pretty common experience on these apps. And one thing that we know is that they tend to have a lot of men. And so that means that there's a lot more competition for partners because there's just a lot more people. And so that experience, that's consistent with things that I've heard before. And also with Tinder, Tinder is an interesting one because it has this reputation of being a hookup app. But then I've also talked to people who have met serious long-term partners on Tinder. But the interesting thing there is that sometimes they're reluctant to tell people because they think that there are these assumptions about what you might be doing on Tinder, what kind of relationship you might be looking for.
Are the stigmas starting to subside about using these dating apps, do you think?
They have. I mean, I think they've gotten a lot better, especially compared to when I first started studying this, just because it's become so common and so normalized. But at the same time, what I've seen happen is that the stigmas become a lot more platform specific. So for example, with Tinder, it's like, okay, I get why you would use online dating, but why would you use Tinder? Because there's expectations of what the culture of the app is like or what people's goals would be. And so to an extent, it's been surprising to me in talking to participants in some of my studies to hear them say that they would be reluctant to tell certain people how they met because they feel like there is still a bit of that stigma based on the platform.
Lisa Sharabi, assistant professor, directs the Relationships and Technology Lab at Arizona State. Call in about dating apps, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Online dating apps, they have changed the way people find potential partners. And I think about this Bounty paper towel commercial. Have you seen it? Where it looks like a grandchild is helping their grandmother swipe with too much gusto, of course, spilling a glass next to the tablet. No, no. Conversation is here about dating apps. Call in with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lisa Sharabi is an assistant professor at Arizona State University focused on technology and the role it has in our interpersonal communication. Lisa, we heard from John in Brown Deer, called in to say online dating is a good way to introduce yourself to someone who has a criminal record. Should people worry about safety when they enter the online dating pools?
It's definitely something that you want to think about because the apps are designed to introduce you to strangers. And so you have to do your homework and you have to make sure that you thoroughly vet somebody before you meet them. And you also want to make sure that the first time you meet, it's somewhere public. And so meeting at a restaurant, a coffee shop, somewhere where there are going to be people around versus going for a hike alone with somebody, that's usually a good idea just to protect yourself.
Your lab is researching dating apps designed for LGBTQ plus people. What do you find interesting in these spaces?
I mean, when you think about the LGBTQ plus population, this is the group that really helped popularize online dating. So some of the earlier dating apps that we had, like Grindr, really created the framework for more recent apps like Tinder. And so we know that LGBTQ plus people are more likely to meet a partner online, more likely to end up in a long-term relationship because of dating apps. And so that I think that this group in particular has had a lot of success using these platforms to meet people. And I think that that's really interesting.
How are these platforms, how have they been changed by the pandemic? I mean, how did dating apps refine their platforms as places to connect in the pandemic?
One thing that a lot of apps did during the pandemic that I thought was really great was that they started to roll out video dating features because people were home. They didn't want to go out. They didn't want to go meet people, or maybe they couldn't go meet people. And so they wanted an opportunity to date and at least get a sense of somebody. And so video dating, I think, helped a lot of people do that. And so it's essentially like a FaceTime with somebody on your phone, but you're doing it through the dating app. And something that I like about it is that it's kind of like a test run for the first date where you can talk to somebody and you can get a feel for their sense of humor, their personality, without actually investing the time and the money and going to meet them just yet. And so that was something that came out of the pandemic that I think is going to stick around. And so far it has.
Our governor has declared this year the year of mental health while, you know, pushing for a lot more funding for mental health services. What has your lab discovered about how dating apps affect mental health?
This is actually a question that we're looking at right now because there's a lot of research looking at social media's effect on mental health and a lot of research showing that there's an association there that, you know, the more you use social media platforms, sometimes the poorer your mental health ends up being. But there's also a lot of different explanations for why that might be the case. It could be people who self-select into using the apps a lot. It could be the way that they're engaging with them. And so I've had similar questions about online dating, especially when you think about swiping through lots of people and potentially getting rejected a lot more than you would face-to-face just because of all of the increased opportunities to just meet people. It makes you wonder what effect that might be having. And there's some preliminary research right now. I mean, there aren't a lot of studies on this topic, but the ones that do exist have shown that there might be an association there, or the apps could be having a negative effect on well-being for some people.
When you look at the age breakdown of people using these dating apps, is it still a younger generation gravitating toward dating apps, or has it really proliferated across age groups?
I think it's really proliferated, but the one demographic in particular that uses apps a lot would be young people, people between the ages of 18 and 29, which is kind of interesting and in a lot of ways counterintuitive because these are people who are in college, like they're meeting new people all the time, and even they are turning to these apps for something that they obviously aren't getting face to face.
Or maybe they just feel more comfortable on their phones than face-to-face contact and communication.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I kind of have speculated as well, because this is also, I mean, when you look at Gen Z, when you look at millennials, these are people who have really grown up with the technology that are used to having relationships online. I mean, they grew up with social media. And so I think that online dating is just kind of a natural extension of what they're already used to.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment on this Valentine's Day. We're talking about the evolution of dating apps, where they're at today with Liesl Shorabi, Director of the Relationships and Technology Lab at Arizona State University. You can join in with your experiences on dating platforms, 800-642-1234. Liesl, how could these dating apps be improved? What are those next steps?
I think that looking at ways to make the process easier for people, to make it more effective for people. I mean, I've done research looking at the success stories and looking at the experiences of people who have really had luck in using these platforms to find long-term partners. And, you know, the platforms changed their lives. They met somebody who they're still with. And I think that those stories are fantastic. But at the same time, there's also a lot of people who are getting burnt out with the process. They're getting frustrated and they're leaving without actually meeting anybody at all. And so I think that looking at those experiences is key to figuring out ways to make the matching process better, ways to make the communication process better so it works for more people. And so when I think about things like video dating, I see that as one of a number of potential opportunities to help improve the experience for people.
Let's talk about artificial intelligence and the role it plays in these platforms. You know, I could imagine with the explosion of ChatGPT that people are having that, you know, produce their personal profiles. What are you seeing out there with AI?
This is something that I've been reading about and hearing about as well, like people using something like ChatGPT to write their pickup line for them as a way of getting attention. And in some ways, this is what people have been doing. I mean, people will copy and paste opening lines, like they'll come up with a good one and they'll copy and paste it and they'll use it on a bunch of different people. And so I think they're looking at ChatGPT and seeing an opportunity to really just outsource that task to something else. And so, I mean, I think that that's one way people are using this, using it to write profiles. I mean, it makes the process a little easier because online dating at the end of the day is it's work and you have to invest a lot of time, especially if you're looking for something serious. And so I think that people sometimes jump at opportunities to make the process a little bit more efficient.
I want to bring up one of the tension points here about filtering by monogamous or polyamorous status. There's a debate out there. How do you land on it?
Yeah, it's tricky because on the one hand, having the option to filter can keep people from experiencing really negative people, negative interactions on these platforms. And it can keep them from experiencing things like harassment, which we know are really rampant on dating apps. But at the same time, the idea of filtering and closing people off to other users, like it definitely gives me pause to hear about apps doing this. So I think that it's a tricky one.
Okay, remains to be seen. More research, perhaps, on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we touch on virtual reality? How is VR being used in modern dating?
So this is something that we're actually looking at in my lab right now and seeing what it's like to send people on virtual first dates and how they get to know each other that way. Because when I look at virtual reality, I mean, we're obviously a ways away from people putting on headsets and going on dates, but I think it kind of brings dating back to its roots and gives people a chance to meet a little bit more organically. Because right now on a dating app, you meet people through profiles, you swipe, you message. But if you meet somebody in virtual reality, you could essentially walk up to somebody in a virtual bar and sit down and start talking to them with all of the advantages that you would get from a dating app, like being able to see a profile and getting some background information. So it's interesting and funny in a way, as technology advances, it just gets more similar to how we used to date face to face. And that's something that I could potentially see happening with virtual reality.
Oh, but it feels a bit creepy. Are we ready for this?
I don't think we're ready today. Okay. I don't know if we're ready at this moment to be an avatar and interact with somebody that way. And it's interesting to watch people go on these virtual first dates because a lot of the people in the study we're doing right now, they're college students and they've never talked to somebody in VR before. So it's still a really, really new experience. But in 5 or 10 years, will we be ready? I mean, I think it's possible.
Liesl, thank you so much for joining us. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much.
Liesl Shorabi is director of the Relationships and Technology Lab at Arizona State University and assistant professor in its Hugh Downs School of Human Communication. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.